This is HPR episode 2855 entitled, HPR NYE Show 2018-2019 Part 6. It is the 10th anniversary show of Honky Magoo, and is about 141 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, the HPR community comes together to say Happy New Year and chat.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Speaking of which, where's any new episodes of The Makers?
Yeah, well, there's Dore and there's Aaron that usually record that, and we're having a hard time getting those guys together with everybody else. But that doesn't mean that I or somebody else couldn't record, but we're just lazy, I guess.
I do miss The Makers podcast. Then again, I think it's been about a year since I've had mine working right, so I need to actually just hunker down, get some time, and try to get mine up and working again. Either that or just buy a new one.
Which one did you have?
I had a Trunks EX1.
Okay. I think Liam on the show has one of those. He likes it.
It's not bad, but I changed out the hot end, and since I changed out the hot end to like a generic E3D, I have not had any success getting it to work right. I think the stock hot end that I had with it, I've done something where I just crudded the thing up. So the Trunksy, I think, is one of those 3D printers that I consider to be a cheap learning experience, where you're got to learn a lot of things the hard way.
Yeah, I've never used one, but a friend of mine, I think, had one. I saw it for about 2 seconds one day.
How's that now?
You sound perfect.
Just right.
Yes. Great. So what I was saying before I went into Alvin mode was that I don't know where anybody's noticed, but I was on a Mac system and I was using VirtualBox, and I noticed that the graphics actually had a penguin in them, very much like a Linux penguin, and I thought it was kind of odd because I wasn't even I was installing a Linux system, but I tried installing a Windows system just to check, but it was still Linux, well, Penguin graphics. And being that VirtualBox is an Oracle product now, it seemed kind of odd that even if you were not using Linux, that you would have the Penguin graphics. Anybody else notice that?
When did you get a Penguin graphic? When or where?
I think it was in the wizard. I'd have to look. I took some screenshots of it, but it's on an NR computer. But it was basically like in the setup wizard. And I think after you had a machine set up, it was in one of the configuration pages.
Yeah, I think I know what you might mean. So like, for example, if you go into VirtualBox, which I don't think I even have installed at the moment saying that, but anyway, you're setting up, you go for the wizard to set up a virtual machine, you select the ISO, and then you go, and it says, what operating system is this? And you can go like, Linux, Windows, Mac, Ubuntu possibly, and then if it's Ubuntu, it might change on the Ubuntu logo. If you go other or unknown or use Linux, it's going to put, maybe a penguin, I guess, or something. It might be that.
No, it's not that. I know what you're talking about, where you can have like an icon per virtual machine. This was something different. It was like kind of friendly graphics showing a penguin that was working with the toolbox. And I was on a Mac system at the time.
I guess.
It was before I even chose Linux or something like that.
Yeah. But VirtualBox is also cross-platform, so I've never used it on a Mac. I have on Windows as well, obviously. But and I assume it's pretty much the same when it comes to looks, regardless of the platform, Linux, Windows or Mac. So, and I assume that VirtualBox originally might have even come from the Linux world, kind of, when it was under Innotek, all those in all their history. So it can, might explain it a bit, but otherwise, Apple secretly love Linux, like Microsoft apparently do now. And so there's your answer.
Yeah, I don't know. Without talking to the developers, it would be hard to say. I don't remember seeing the graphics before. It was kind of a shock when I saw it, even though I've been using VirtualBox for like 10 years.
Well, did you do an upgrade of your VirtualBox version?
Yeah, it was a recent version. I had it was maybe 4 months ago. 3 months ago, and I downloaded a new VirtualBox for Mac, and I was getting ready to install, I forget what now, but I tried installing something unrelated to Linux, and I still saw these, you know, this penguin that was very reminiscent of a Linux penguin. It wasn't the exact one, but I just thought it was odd because, you know, VirtualBox had the family line of being through Sun and then through Oracle. And as you said, the company before Innotek, or I'm probably sounding like the Office Space company.
Well, the thing you probably ran into, well, most certainly ran into, was an artifact of the new generation that may have been VirtualBox 6, which is fairly recent. And because it was a benign artifact, they didn't remove it.
Yeah, if I search for like screenshots of VirtualBox online, I don't see the exact graphics I'm talking about, but I do see how they have, you know, different logos for the different operating systems. But the graphics I was seeing were very much like it was the penguin that was the centerpiece, working with different operating systems. So it seemed like it was trying to be centering around Linux specifically, even though it's not.
So, here's the answer, right? You basically got cracked by a Linux user because you were using a Mac, and they were like thinking, no, you should be using Linux. So, oh, use VirtualBox. Let's get into that as well. And then they put in the penguin, basically, to remind you that you're meant to be using Linux, apparently, not Mac OS X.
What? I don't know how you came to that conclusion.
Trying to make a joke about it. I'm not the best joker. But yeah.
Okay.
Actually, he may have something there. How does this read?
Well, I mean, since I was getting downloading the software directly from VirtualBox's website and stuff, it seems unlikely. But
well, what would happen if somebody cracked the VirtualBox storage server?
If they did, I hope they would do something better than just change the little icon to look like Tux.
There we go. I found a link. I put a link in the chat channel, and if you scroll down, it's on sysnettechsolutions.com. There's a screenshot that shows a penguin holding a hammer and a wrench, and the screenshot seems to clearly show it's VirtualBox running on a Mac and a Mac virtual machine inside of it.
Oh, how cute. And yes, it looks like Tux, or enough like Tux. Maybe the VirtualBox developers just basically really like Linux. So, yeah.
So anyways, one thing, getting back to another thing, you were talking before about 32-bit systems and pretty much talking about how making reference to a bunch of old hardware and old operating systems, but one thing you may not have mentioned, I'm not sure, is that Raspberry Pi.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mountain Time. Raspberry Pis are actually 32-bit as of now and before, so it could very well be, if they end up being 32-bit for another 5 or even 10 years, that we'll have systems that will be 32-bit, fairly close to 2038.
Well, the original ones were 32-bit. I believe the newer ones are 64. Yeah, the A54 and 64, even though they still run 32-bit operating system most of the
time. Yeah, I don't know about the new, enough about the new Raspberry Pis, but it probably makes sense that the newer ones are 64-bit now, because it's still getting cheaper, isn't it, hardware? Like that.
No, I think they're still 32-bit. I downloaded Raspbian recently, and it still only has one architecture download, and their website only shows one architecture download.
The processor is 64. Raspbian is still 32 because the people who run the Raspberry Pi Foundation said that the A54 is the best 32-bit processor they could get, even though, I mean, in other words, they're not right now interested in porting to 64, though I believe there are ARM images for 64-bit.
Right, but even with that, I'm still saying that for the foreseeable future, we could have Raspberry Pis installed with 32-bit OSs.
You're right, and that could be that could become an issue. In which case, you know, the people working on Raspbian should really, you know, switch things before that actually becomes a problem.
One of the most interesting things is that the Raspberry Pi, the last update to the Raspberry Pi 3 series has been made.
Linked also to an earlier subject, or not, well, kind of. You know where the Raspberry Pi was actually made, don't you, Netminer? The actual, where it actually got made originally, yeah?
Italy, right? Oh, wait, that's Arduino.
No, not Italy. No, not Italy. Netminer, you know, yeah?
I'm making a joke now.
Oh, you know where it was made?
The UK, right?
Well, yeah, but where in the UK? That's what I'm getting at. We were talking about Brexit earlier as well, so that's what I said. Sort of linked to another subject, but not really, but kind of. But yeah, not really, but I think it was with Netmine I was doing that with, so. Or was it Nick?
I don't really know.
Well, you talked about Scotland and all that, yeah, earlier, right, yeah?
Like, yes,
but it's not Scotland, it's made in Wales,
Really?
Yes, really, it's made in Wales. That's where it got made.
Okay.
In this little Wales where not much goes on, really, compared to the to England and so on, but yeah.
Well, is that where Acorn was?
No, I'm not sure with Acorn. I think Acorn was in England somewhere. But yeah, there's Risk OS as well, like keeping that alive, keeping that going as an open source project, and I've been to a conference for that, a small one, and that was interesting. Twice I went to that, and used to have the old Acorns at school back in the 90s, but that's long gone now. And the BBC computers as well. But actually, probably don't even know what I'm talking about, but yeah.
Isn't there a new RISC OS for the FPGA stuff that people are using now?
What's FPGA? What's that?
Field Programmable Gate Array. Basically, you turn a bunch of gates into emulating a piece of hardware.
Oh, I don't know. But I know you can run RISC OS on the Raspberry Pi as well, and obviously the old Acorn machines and things like that as well.
There's a couple of new ones they're using in embedded systems, and they make high-performance specific processors for like single-use tasks, but they do it all on hardware, so it makes it super fast.
Yeah, and then there's one that, what did they call it, MIST or something? Basically,
that's the game system that's FPGA-based, but that's, I don't think that's, well, it could be based on that processor. Well, it's RISC, but it's, I don't know that it's the open free RISC OS I'm thinking of.
But I believe the proprietary RISC OS is in the old one is basically gone or mostly gone now, and it's all about this RISC OS that's open source, yeah. But then of course some of the programs aren't open source. Like the operating system is open source, but a lot of the old programs aren't open source as well, but the actual operating system is, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, like Haiku, which is an open source version of BOS.
Yeah, I know about Haiku as well. It's been quite good, in fact, or usable, somebody said before, but, yeah, I've never really used it.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in March.
What, the back to Brexit thing, you mean? Yeah?
No, I'm talking Pi Day in March.
Where's that?
314.
What, 314? In America somewhere. Is it all?
No, yeah. Pi Day. No,
Pi Day. Raspberry Pi Day, March 14th.
What, like globally or something?
Very much globally, because that's when the Raspberry Pi Foundation tends to spring new versions.
Right.
Oh, right, yeah. I don't really follow Raspberry Pi enough to know about that, but okay, yeah.
So they upgraded the last module that they're going to, I think the compute module or one of them, to the current B plus. It's the A plus that they updated to the current Raspberry Pi B plus processor.
Yeah, what was that one called? The A plus?
Yes, the A plus. But it's basically a Raspberry Pi 3 A plus.
That was an interesting one. So, Joe, are you still on? I guess not. But he was talking about, and I started looking at it, doing it recently, the Alexa Pi and stuff like that. I started looking at, like, trying to spec it out and trying to figure out how to get, like, purchase, you know, your single board computer, your button, because I believe it requires you to have a button, and then you need a button, a speaker, and a mic to make one of those things. And I started trying to spec everything out, and around this time of year, the cost for like an Echo Dot or like even the new Echo, like third generation Dot, is somewhere between $25 to $30. And I think the Google Home Minis are similarly priced this time of year as well. It seemed like it was going to be like way too much effort for what I could probably easily purchase. But yeah, that's because I actually have two Echo Dots that I got for Christmas, along with two TP-Link plugs that I have set up. One is set up to a lamp in our living room, which there was no good like switch for, so I wanted to hook that up to it so I can control it through the voice, and a lamp in the bedroom where, again, it was in a spot where there was no good switch for, so we can control it through voice. And we've just been having fun with just playing around with the Echo, and I was considering using single board computers and making my own ecosystem and putting it up into the kids' rooms, more on the lines of a home intercom system slash a way that we can just kind of play music up in their rooms. But trying to spec, like I was just saying, trying to spec things out for trying to build one just kind of seemed not very plausible.
Yeah, you run into the system builder's dilemma, where Dell or whoever can put together a machine using wholesale parts a lot cheaper than you can if you go down to your micro center or what have you.
I think it's more of a control issue. You want something that you have full control over.
Yeah, and that, you know what, I would have especially appreciated the fact that for the kids to be able to use it, they would have had to walk up and push the button to get it to work, and that was kind of, they wouldn't be able to just straight up talk to it. I kind of appreciated that form of it. But at the same time, just trying to spec things out, I mean, you take, even just leaving the price of the Raspberry Pi out of it, trying to find like a speaker and mic type of situation, and then something for the button, and then you probably want to put a case on it, but even if you leave the case out, just trying to put a speaker, mic, and button, pricing that out, you're almost just better off buying your own. And then, like, I'd probably just wait. And if I get anything recently, I'd put it somewhere central located upstairs, like in the hallway or even in the bathroom or something, where it's kind of centrally located between the two bedrooms that are upstairs, as opposed to one in each. Because I think if they can talk to it at this age, I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. Right now, my 6-year-old just wants to sit there and constantly have Alexa tell her jokes all day long. The 3-year-old can't speak up enough to actually get it Alexa to respond. But either way, that's why I would have been happier with a button. But just price-wise, I think it would be. I mean, you're talking about $25 versus it almost seems like $20 at least just to get a speaker and mic type of thing that I can plug into even just regular Pi.
Yes. Okay, two things. So, Julo, whatever he's called, I'll look at that video later, I guess, about the Brisk OS. And I was listening to this, but Alexia and all this. The thing is, all this, it sounds like you're using this, you know, voice to speech. Where this is your voice getting to do things, Lexia and it's Cortana and all this kind of stuff. I don't, and Apple's got one as well. I don't personally trust those things because, you know, anything that's going to pick up on what you're saying like that could quite simply be spying on you. That's one thing. And I mean, a lot of people do use those things, but I won't. Just a bit like I don't like using public Wi-Fi either, because again, that's not secure. They can get into your device potentially.
So I'm not really worried about anybody spying on me. If they're going to do it, they can do it with my phone. Because let's be honest, microphone. Your phone could be cracked pretty easily, and you're walking around with that thing all the time. Anyways, I've debated putting all of those devices, the plugs and the Echo Dots into a separate network. I'm sorry, I'm kind of fumbling here. Basically, I have like another. I have an old router that I could probably just hook up to my network and hook up all those wireless devices up to that network, and it being completely separate from, you know, all the part of the network where all my other stuff is, and like my DMZ where things like the Etherpad are on and stuff like that. So it would be on its own network. But at the same time, you have your phone in your pocket.
Yes.
People can crack that phone.
I agree with that point as well. And that's a very good point there. And we said something earlier. We talked about the purism, the RAM a bit earlier, where you wouldn't be able to turn the cam off on the hardware switch and all this kind of stuff. But I totally agree with that as well, that these smartphones, can be spying on you. The camera could come on and the microphone that you're knowing and all this. And I know that full well. Most of us use phones now, even though we know this. Some of us know this. And a lot of people don't know though that actually it's very easy to potentially for somebody to get into your phone especially if you're going to the Wi-Fi or something. But yeah, we're basically walking around with devices that can spy on us in the modern world, and lots of people.
Right, so I don't see any reason to be afraid of Echo if I'm already having a device in my pocket that can, everywhere I go, that can record my voice and stuff.
I had the same conversation with my dad over the holidays. He was telling me how he was concerned about having Echo or Google Home in his house, and I told him, well, you know, Google and Siri are listening to you right now. What's the difference? And he said, Siri's not listening to me. I have to click the button and activate it to get it to respond. And so he takes his phone out of his pocket, and he says, hey, Siri, or whatever you say. And it, of course, spoke up and said, you know, what can I do for you, or whatever it says. And he was completely taken aback by the fact that that thing was on in his pocket, and he didn't even know it.
Siri is the Apple one, isn't it?
Yeah, Siri's Apple.
What's the they're all listening one?
For at least the keyword, you know, and there have been cases, but I don't think they were given any information, but, you know, Amazon Echo was listening to people and crime happened, and I think they didn't turn over the data, but it was clear that they had recorded the data.
What's the one for Android? How do you get, what do you say to the Android one?
Okay, Google.
Of course, okay, Google, yeah.
Is okay, Google. But the home you can change to, say, respond to other things.
Well, and there's the Apple one as well, isn't there?
Apple, sorry, Siri.
Yeah, because I've got an iPhone as well, which, again, you know, that's going to probably be more likely to spy on me than anything else, but yeah.
Actually, it seems like Apple has been they're pushing for the whole security thing. What is it that they were, somebody was trying to sue Apple to try to get them to unlock somebody's phone?
Wasn't it the FBI or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it was the FBI. I think
so. Right. So they're actually pushing for security. So as much as you don't like Apple, you shouldn't like Apple because they try to get you locked into the Appleverse where you have to spend, you know, $13,000 for a computer and, you know, $800 for a frickin' phone or whatever the hell it is. But you can't argue with the fact that they're making an OS that's designed specifically for their hardware, so that's going to work really well. Whether you like the operating system or not, I mean, that's all up to people's opinion. I haven't used a Mac in okay, I've never really used a Mac, but I can't argue with the fact that I'm sure it works well.
Apple's also been in the news. I'm not sure how much the other guys have as far as finding gigabytes of data on people's phones that's been recording continuously all this stuff, and you know, people didn't know about it until their phones started not working right.
Oh, just the thing with Apple as well, though, is, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like the hardware looks quite nice in a way, and they put lipstick on it, like people say, and the operating system and the Mac OS, like the graphics and all this. But then they get a lot of sort of like people who don't, you know, people don't really, like, we understand tech for the most part here, you know, but we are not average people in this context. Average people have very little understanding of tech and how it works and all the rest of it. And they are basically the prime, and a lot of these people then go for Apple products because they, I guess it could be partly because they've used Windows and they kind of know at the back of their mind that it doesn't work very well, crashing, reboots, viruses, but it's not just that. It's like Apple has this like, hey, it's cool, let's buy an expensive device because all these other people have it. But then it does, I mean, iOS is quite boring, I find, from what I've seen of it. But I find Android boring as well, but they both work, and they do the task, and they actually work and do, you know, do what they're meant to. They work reasonably well, and so people have iOS devices, but it's to do with this, like, hey, it's cool, and because it's expensive as well, people think, oh, yeah, that must be worth money. That must be worth it. But generally Linux people seem to give Apple less flack than, say, Microsoft or Microsoft, because, of how it's sort of, you know, BSD based or whatever on the Mac, and it's not too bad in iOS, I guess, how it's designed.
It, as stupid as it sounds, it really has probably nothing to do with tech and more to do with the fact that all the accessories and customs and skinning you can do with the iPhones, because there's only like two or three versions available at a time.
Skin for themes or?
No, things? I mean just the actual hardware, like you can go out and get a case that's personalized to what your tastes are.
Oh, cases, right.
I mean, there's like a zillion cases available for an iPhone, but there's only a couple available for any version of an Android device, because there's so many Android devices out there.
Right. But you also have to remember that iOS likes to do, well, iOS, OS X likes to do what we like to call the OS rot, where after a while your operating system will no longer work with the hardware. No matter how much, like, if you just keep updating things, it's just going to make the whole system completely stop working, and it kind of forces you to have to buy new hardware.
Well, like Windows used to do.
Did Windows do that?
Well, I know.
No, they just make it consume so many resources that it doesn't run anything right.
Right. I was going to say, but with Windows, you could still, like, obviously you wouldn't get any updates if you run something like XP or whatever. I know they've worked pretty hard to kill that now. But you know, it's not nearly as bad as iOS, which, I mean, everything seems to be working fine until you update, and then everything starts to run like crap, and then you update again, and everything starts to work even more like crap. And I mean, I've known people who had their hardware for a while, and like, yeah, everything was working fine. I mean, all the thing they're doing is going on the internet and using a word processor on the thing. So, you know, why should everything just go to crap? But everything just slowly went to crap, and they had to wind up buying something else.
We had a realtor in the office with an iMac desktop, and first they had to update, Firefox or Chrome or something, and then that wouldn't install the new version because it wasn't the newest version of the iMac operating system. And then at some point, I think it was QuickBooks or some other thing, where that also wouldn't install an update because it wasn't the current version of Mac OS. And they did end up having to buy a new machine just so they could run the software they normally used just, you know, 3 years ago.
Exactly. Wasn't there something within like the last year or so that said that that iOS on the Apple iPhones was actually Like, they would, as soon as you updated, it did something that actually, like, brought the speed of the phone down.
Yeah, they were sued because they killed the battery life if your phone was a certain version.
Right.
I just had a mumble crash or something, so I had to restart that. You said something like, it's not just that, and then I have my mumble problem, and I assume I can be heard now as well.
Well, I was just saying, it's also the fact that Apple does the OS rot, where if you're on a piece of hardware for too long, the operating system will force you, basically, with every update, start degrading the system to the point where you have to, they almost force you to buy new hardware. And they do that on both OS X and their iOS systems.
Well, then I think there may be two things here. So, yeah, one point was that they've recently admitted to slowing down iPhones because of when they get about 2 years old, so people apparently buy new phones. And they were like, no, it's not that. It's just because of performance. And then I was talking about earlier about people going for Apple in the first place, but then I had mumble crashing. Yeah. And why people go for Apple in the first place.
It's simple. I think a lot of it has to do with simple, and everybody else that they know has it, and since, like, everybody they know has the same thing, and they're using the same thing, and it's a very simple interface, and, you can't really argue with that. I mean, with Android, Android is kind of turning into what Microsoft is on the desktop, where there's so many applications and so many different versions of it. It's kind of like when you buy a computer and it has Windows on it, it's going to be kind of like you're going to get the Sony version of Windows with its theming at first. I mean, obviously you can take all that stuff off for the most part, but it's the same thing when you buy an Android phone. You get the LG version of Android with all of its stuff, with all of its stuff on it and whatnot. So Android has become so big, and the Play Store so big, and there's so many other marketplaces where you can get stuff. Where the iPhone is, you're given this iPhone. You have basically, this is what you use for your texting. This is what you use for, if you want to do video conferencing. I don't know what the hell it's called. I'm blanking on it. For video conferencing with other people who have iPhones, you use this app, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right, you're basically getting a screen with a bunch of apps, and that's it. While with Android, you're given, it's like a desktop. You swipe through your different type of desktops that you have. You have widgets and stuff like that. You don't have widgets on iPhone. You just have the big bold icons for those applications.
I forgot to put recording on, but now I'm doing it again. But anyway, I guess you have a point there. So the people have gone for iPhone Apple because, I mean, even I'm thinking like something like Ubuntu with its old Unity interface in a way, but fully inspired by Apple to an extent anyway. But like, you have the icon, you have that, but yeah, they have like one option. So actually, even in Windows, you've got like your start menu interface, and that's about it there. But yeah, it's like you've got one version. This is how it looks. Everybody has an iPhone, they're going to see the same thing when it comes to software. The same themes, the same general look, and everybody's getting that, the same thing. Whereas with Android, it's like, well, there's Samsung, there's Sony, there's different implementations of Android with different themes and boot-up graphics and even the apps that are pre-installed to an extent. And so you got like Samsung's Android, and you got like Sony's Android, and you got like LG's Android, and so on. And I think that's the point you were getting at as well.
Well, yeah, but they also have I have very limited experience with iOS products, but from my understanding, for the most part, the screen is pretty much just a bunch of icons for choosing your applications. And then I think there's a bar in the bottom maybe for some quick applications, but it's not like Android, where Android is almost set up like a desktop, where you can have, one desktop that's just your calendar, and another desktop where you have certain applications and other widgets and whatnot. I don't think there's any widgets in the iOS sphere.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I saw that you can add user accounts on Android on my Sony phone your Dave, but yeah,
it's only on iOS handheld?
I think so. Like, again,
that's interesting. You know what that is? That's Windows 3.1.
Hang on. If it's Windows 3.1, then it's Windows 3.1 with much better, nicer-looking graphics. Well, I'm working networking if it's iOS, but you know, the graphics are so nice on Apple, aren't they? That's part of it as well, the general feel and look.
Well, think of it like this. It's kind of like life. You know, Apple is simple and pretty, but rarely is simple and pretty good for a long-term relationship.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Well, actually, it's like nobody got fired for buying IBM. For people who want their hands held the way Apple does, having everything in the walled garden of Apple Store and Apple OS and Apple-branded SSDs and Apple-branded disks and Apple-branded, you know, screens, it is a safe choice. An expensive safe choice, but it is a safe choice.
But it's the brand as well. It's so cool because it's expensive, like I was saying, and it's a brand people know. But saying that, even with Android, you know, to an extent, you know, Samsung is the biggest player because lots of people have Samsung and are knowing about and yeah.
You also made a good point about the whole walled garden thing, because I think Apple's done a good job of marketing themselves as being a walled garden for businesses, because there's a lot of businesses that will hand out Apple devices for their users, and they have them locked down so that the only thing that they can use is their proprietary applications on their systems. I'm not sure whether they think that it's a little bit harder to do on an Android system, or if there's too many Android products out there that you know, they can't nail one down to be able to do something like that.
Who made that point? But yeah, there's that as well. There's a tie-in between the hardware and the software and targeting business and or consumers even. And it's all like, yeah, this is it. This is the Apple way, basically. This is the hardware. This is the software. You meant to run these together. And I read that recently some of the Macs couldn't run Linux, but now they can run Linux or whatever. The new Mac or something like that.
But there's a lot of businesses that'll hand out to their employees, like, Apple products. Like, I know my mother does sales repping, and they handed her an iPad to be able to check in all the information and stuff like that, because I think it's locked down to that version of software.
They do that here now as well. Sure, they get iPads and businesses, maybe schools even, but obviously the only other choice will be Windows otherwise, and I think Windows is kind of, like I was saying earlier, I think Windows is basically showing to people that over the years, even non-technical people, that it doesn't really work very well. It can get viruses, it can crash. I mean, look at Windows Phone, for example, which they just dropped last 2018, 2017, whatever. They've completely dropped the phone project because it wasn't going to compete against Android and iOS. And it must be right, because people know at the back of their mind that it's like, you know, Windows on a PC didn't work that well, so why do I want a phone when there's an iPhone and Android out there? I might as well use that.
Right, and I wasn't talking necessarily about the desktop. I'm talking more on the lines of they're pushing out their iPads. And, I mean, there's some schools. Schools have seemed to be going somewhere between Apple products and like Chromebooks and stuff like that, because the Chromebooks, they've done a good job at walling off what they can install on them, and having pre-installed the software that they use for their schools. There's a lot of businesses that they'll like hand out to their employees that are on the road and stuff, things like iPads. As you know, I'm not talking about necessarily Windows. Windows isn't even in the mobile marketplace, as far as I'm concerned. They've just completely failed when it came to that.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. That they've totally dropped the whole Windows Phone. But I'm saying it's because consumers didn't want it, or not enough people. It was mostly sold in mainland Europe, I read somewhere. That's where people have Windows Phone mostly, apparently. But with the Chromebook, that's an interesting one as well, in a way, because, okay, it's very dumbed down and all that, but you can stick your own Linux distro on there if you know what you're doing. But again, it's got Google behind it, which people, the mainstream know Google. Google, the people trust Google enough in the mainstream, and they know for Google because of the search engine, also because of Android potentially anyway. But you know, it's Google, so it's like, oh, Google, yeah, cool. We'll have this cheap Chromebook and use that, sure. And we'll give kids that at schools possibly. Because it's again a big brand, big known name. So people, you know, people trust big companies, have lots of money, generally speaking.
Well, when it comes to Chromebooks, I think are cheaper. Plus the fact of they do have the ability to, you know, do other things with them, but it takes a little bit of know-how to be able to do that. And a lot of times if, you know, the teachers find out or somebody finds out about it, then all they have to do is bring that in. They can wipe it and reflash it to the, you know, the original stock with the original stock, applications on there and then just send them right back out. Who was it? I know Kevin Wisher works through in the K-12 school system, and I believe they are all on, Apple products, iPads and stuff like that. I wonder if it was Taj I was talking to when the school system that he was in that they gave him Chromebooks.
Well, maybe the, schools that are giving out iPads have all money for this, right? And then the ones that are giving out Chromebooks don't have as much money, so they're being cheap and giving out Chromebooks instead. I don't know.
Well, it's my understanding that these, you know, they get all the hardware back at the end of the year and whatnot. So, you know, Apple used to be big in trying to get their fingers into schools by giving away a bunch of free stuff. I'm not sure if they're trying kind of the same way and trying to work their way into schools and work their way into kids' hands by giving them, you know, a bunch of hardware for cheap.
And Microsoft did that with colleges here, which is not the same as America, by the way. But similar-ish kind of any colleges and schools possibly student discounts, or you get Windows for free or Microsoft Office for free because you're a student or training teacher or something.
I remember getting the full Microsoft suite for $5 a CD, $5 for the OS, $5 for Office, $5 for the programming environment, pretty much anything for $5 on one CD.
Wow.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. When I was working for a school, you know, if Microsoft charged for Office Pro or any version of Office, what they would charge them, since they charge that to the school, I would have been installing OpenOffice all over the place or LibreOffice. But you know, when they're charging $68 for Pro or maybe Office Business or whatever. You know, it's hard for me to convince the administration, yeah, save $68 and get this Office suite you're not familiar with, even though it's better.
Yeah, I remember.
Isn't the iOS upgrade like $50 or $100?
I like how 5150 says at the end of that one, even though it's better, because, I mean, I remember having a debate with the guy who... Odd Camp in last 2017, yeah, Canterbury, and we were sitting there on a Sunday night at the hotel, and we got into the debate about LibreOffice. There's a guy who Matt on Impress, might know that name somewhere. The guy does Ubuntu Mate and things like that, and I was with him and somebody else, and we were there at like 4:30 in the morning having a debate about if LibreOffice really is good enough or not compared to Microsoft Office. And it's like, yeah, we should probably get some sleep because we've got to check out of the hotel later. But I mean, I would say in many ways it is better than Microsoft Office or usable or you know, good enough. But then there's a few specific features that only certain people need that can't do or doesn't quite do the same. And it's, it annoys me a little bit with my older brother, for example. He's doing teacher training now. He got a laptop off the computer fair. Like, got it cheap. I said, yeah, you might as well buy that one. I put a bunch on it. And, you know, he's got his email, he's got his Firefox. He needs Scratch for teach the programming for kids thing that they use here now for from the Raspberry Pi world, I think, originally. But he, you know, you think you're giving him a better operating system, but then he phoned me up a few weeks, 2 weeks later or something, was like, so, yeah, but I got a confession. I can hear the Windows noise in the background of that phone call, but he's like, so, but I got a confession. They gave me Windows 10 for free, so I've upgraded Windows 8.1 to that, and he's, you know, that's what they do. They lock people in with these free giveaways, and then when people don't want to give something else a chance enough, like LibreOffice or in the past OpenOffice or any of these alternative things, they just stay locked in, basically. And then Microsoft wants to do it with the schools and all that, because that's part of it. Get people locked in when they're young and all that.
Well, before Microsoft, Apple was selling 68K Macs to schools for half or a third the retail price. So they were doing it first, and then about the time they switched over to the IBM processor, the PowerPC processor, I think they couldn't afford to do it anymore and quit. So I got a lot of legacy schools, and they were like, well, what? You know, they started out buying Macs, and then suddenly Macs were expensive, and they were like, well, why are we spending all this money on Macs? And I would tell them, yeah, why are you spending all this money on Macs? When the students get out of school, unless they go into art or something, they'll never see a Mac again.
Yeah, I think my entire high school was pretty much Macs, except for a very small lab where they taught some of the I don't think it was Microsoft Office at the time. I don't remember what the heck it was. I think it was like a Mia Pro and stuff like that back then. But yeah, only one lab where we had IBM stuff.
Yeah, so my school.
My
secondary school, you would say, or high school, you would say over there, I suppose. It was basically Windows PCs, and then there was a few Macs, but only really for the art students or music students. And also at college, which is not the same in the UK, I said that earlier, but there's some rubbish IT course. But you'd open the computer up, it was slightly more technical, that one. No level, it was rubbish. But they did decide to put something in about OpenOffice, which was kind of nice at the time. But yeah, it's all rubbish IT teaching in this country. In fact, I'd say the whole UK, and for the most part anyway, is very behind when it comes to, say, IT and computing and all that, compared to, say, somewhere like Germany, where they have actually embraced open source in certain, like Munich, where they've done a U-turn and gone back to Windows, but they went and did a switch to Linux and OpenOffice back in 2004 and things like that.
Well, I heard part of the problem with Munich is that they had to have their own custom Linux. They didn't just go with OpenSUSE or something.
Yeah. It was custom Linux. Also, just before, in case I forget to say this, there was a story about the Google CEO or somebody like that came over to London and was in some conference with, like, people from schools and also people from the government, MPs, and he says something like, oh, you know what? ICT is really rubbish in the UK. All you do is learn Microsoft Office, and that's about it. There's nothing about programming or anything like this. And so apparently the people in this audience listened a bit, and it was like, right, we're going to do some programming teaching at schools, and we're going to, and things like this, or try and get into curriculum. And also the Raspberry Pi, I believe, got released quite soon after that as well, because the idea was to have young kids being able to learn programming with a cheap device, about £30. And I think it's improved slightly since having to learn Scratch, like I mentioned earlier, to do basic programming. But it's still quite behind. And stuff like that.
Well, if I was in school, I sure wouldn't take my iPad. And that is an inside joke that maybe 10 people in the audience listening will understand when this is broadcast.
Wait, say that again. I think I missed that. Say that again.
So if I was in school, I wouldn't take the iPad.
Well, no. If you have a choice, then, yeah.
That was a reference to a DevRandom days, wasn't it?
It was.
Ha ha! Got it.
See, if you tell everyone, then it's no longer funny.
Well, maybe they'll go back and listen to the old DevRandoms.
That's true. They're still out there. Is it devrandom.org? I should know. Definitely go back and listen to Dev Randoms. I think they're still relevant and funny.
Not sure if they're relevant, but they're definitely funny.
But yeah, it's like, you know, something becomes really popular in general, like an iPad or an iPhone, it could be something else, depending on the time, what year we're in, you know. And then it's like, hey, cool, everybody I know, like, loads of people have this. Oh, that's the more expensive thing. So if I got money for that, I'll have that. If not, I'll go for the slightly cheaper thing, Android in this context. And then, that's what people do. And then those two players, it's called having a stranglehold, I think, of the whole market. Have a stranglehold, I think it's called. And then all these alternatives that in many ways are technically better, such as UbiPorts, which is, you know, going on the Ubuntu Touch project. UbiPorts is actually very good for what it is. And I know as somebody with devices, also know that Sailfish OS is very good for what it is as well, from Yolo or a lot of former Nokia developers. But yet these two things, I guess, you know, never ever going to go mainstream or anywhere close now because of how it is. And that's a shame in a way, but that's how it is, isn't it? The market dictates. And if most people don't know tech enough, then, well, yeah, you know.
I think a lot of these things have a better shot is, like, just for the American market, if you can find a carrier that would actually carry these things, like, and get at least 4G, you know, whether it's CDMA or GSM, doesn't matter. As long as somebody would actually in the U.S. would actually carry these things and get an actual phone for them, then there'd be a lot of people that would actually buy it. Not as big. You're not gonna, you know, put a dent in the marketplace of Android or iOS because there's too many people. Let's be honest. There's too many people out there who are not actual technical people who are using these devices every single day. I mean, this goes back to an argument of, you know, has the world completely turned into mobile? Yes, there's a lot of more people using mobile than there are people using PCs, but a lot of the same people who were using PCs before are, you know, still using PCs, but there's a lot more people who were not using PCs before who are now using mobile. But if you can get people who want something else, or they, you know, are intelligent enough to try something else, I think, and you can actually get a carrier in, like, the US, and actually on a device where you can market that device, I think you have a shot at selling one of these things.
Yeah, so you need a carrier, or a network, as you would just say here, but yeah. Or some sort of hardware manufacturer that's ideally known enough about. Because, I mean, like Ubuntu Touch on the Conical, they did get two hardware players. They got the, that was the Chinese, the Spanish BQ and the Chinese Meizu. So in Spain, BQ was reasonably popular, and in China, Meizu was reasonably popular, but then you couldn't get into the US because of how it was kind of sold to which countries and that. But,
they couldn't get the carriers.
No, you couldn't get the phones into the US, or not as easily.
I think you could still buy a phone.
Or you could get
the hardware device into the US. Yeah, that shouldn't be too hard.
Or you could get the phone in, but it wouldn't work on the American carriers. Network.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I think the radio was different.
Yeah, but I think that it only worked with like a 3G or 2G or something like that if you actually got a carrier to be able to work with the device, but it was completely unusable in the US, I know. It was the same thing with the, who was it? Firefox. The Firefox,
yeah,
was the same way.
I bought a book actually on Amazon, right? It was like £3, really cheap, because it was already old, and I bought it in like, I think 2015 or something, but it was from like, or maybe 2014 or something, but it was from like 2012 or 2011. It was like predicting the future of like Firefox OS and what might happen. What's it called? Mobile Factress or something? I don't know. Mobile Factress or something like that. It was interesting because I read it like 3 years or so later. So it's talking about how like Firefox and could have a chance, and Ubuntu Touch, and maybe even Sailfish, changing the deploy and things like that, how it could maybe do it, and then it, you know, never really changed anything, any of this, because it never, none of these could compete in that sense, really, but it was an interesting read to read, like, 2 years later. I can't remember what that book's called now, but it's here somewhere. But yeah, it's interesting, like, this is 2012, these are predictions and so on, and then you see, like, well, that didn't quite work out, but they won something here with some of these points. And that's what, if the whole world has gone mobile, well, that's debatable, but yeah, I mean, most people who use either computers or mobile devices are mostly using mobile phones and and then possibly tablets as well for those who have tablets. And that the desktop computer or laptop is, you're going to be using the office still for like word processing and all that, sure, spreadsheets and all that stuff. But other than that, not that much, unless you're maybe graphics design or CAD for those who do that, sure. And then gaming possibly, but it's like, I mostly use mobile devices myself now and have done for even just inside your house or your flat, you know, where you have a laptop as well, because for basics, you know, email, listening to music, browsing the internet, you know, it's all fine on the phone for the most part. So why sit there with a bulky laptop, which I'm doing right now?
Right. I was more arguing the point that everyone, that some people like to make, that the laptop is basically dead. And I'm saying that,
yeah, yeah.
That's not really a thing, because as much as you can write an email on your phone, it is more than like a few lines, it is way too damn tedious to do on a phone. Well, I need a keyboard.
Yeah. You can plug a keyboard in possibly, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not busting on a Bluetooth keyboard just to write out a thing. I'd rather just get my computer out, and if it's more than a few lines, I'm just going to write it on a friggin' laptop. And if I just want to check something quick over the net, or you know, do a quick search through the social media networks or something like that, yeah, phone. I mean, the browser is going to work a lot quicker on my phone than it is on any of my laptops for the most part, and it's going to be a lot quicker. But if I want to do pretty much anything else, I'd much rather have a laptop for it. I mean, even if it's like most of my little projects around here are going to be things like trying to connect to one of my single board computers through SSH. Can I do that on the phone? Sure. Again, it's going to be a lot easier to type a lot of this stuff out with an actual keyboard as opposed to trying to do that over on the phone.
Well, yeah, so that's another point in a way, but yeah, some of the programs or things you want to do are going to be better on a phone, or okay on a phone, possibly better on a phone, or just better on a computer. I mean, IRC is a great example, I have. I tried some of the IRC clients. I mean, I tried web IRC even on a mobile phone, and that didn't really work for, you know, web IRC, keyword IRC, all this kind of stuff. I tried to get some sort of app in Android as well for IRC and had a go at something. It just didn't seem to work very well. And then your phone goes on to suspend and you disconnect it off IRC. That's another issue. And it just never really worked very well on the phone. But obviously, if you bring up a laptop or a desktop, it works absolutely great and fine, because really IRC was designed for a laptop and desktop anyway. But and then again, like, you could have like I don't do computer graphics really myself, but I could provide this as an example anyway. If you're going to do graphic design, you're probably going to turn to your laptop or your desktop, be that a PC or a Mac or whatever, not your mobile phone or tablet, even though you could probably do it there, because on the computer or laptop you've got a bigger screen and you've probably got some better software for it anyway that works better. And there are again, CAD or something else I don't do. You're not going to do that on your phone or your tablet. And virtual machines, I think you might be able to run on some of these phones eventually, if not already, because these hardware is always getting better. But, you know, we were talking about virtual machines earlier. So, yeah. You know, you do virtual machines on your on your laptop or your desktop, you don't think, hey, I'll just do a virtual machine on my mobile phone or my tablet.
I mean, look, audio playing, I'd rather obviously have my phone because it's actually portable. A lot of times video playing, I don't like playing video on my laptops at all, really. I'm perfectly fine watching video on my phone. But anything that actually requires typing, I think I'm going to need an actual laptop for, because like I said, I even have a Bluetooth keyboard and I have a tablet and whatnot, but it's not the same, and maybe I just need a better Bluetooth keyboard, but I still would rather open up an actual laptop and do work that way than, trying to do it on the phone. Browsing, on the other hand, I think my browser on my phone works a lot faster than browsers on probably all my computers. And I don't know if that's...
Yeah. I think I agree with... But browsers on the phone seem to work really... I can say in different operating systems. Like, in fact... Android or iOS or, Ubuntu, Touch, Sailfish, Firefox OS, Tizen, I think I tried one and I got a Tizen phone. Mobile browsers seem to work really well, but on a desktop, you probably have had the same thing. You can have your Firefox crashing or the profile goes wrong or your Chrome or whatever goes wrong as well and it's a bit slow.
When the desktop browsers are going to open up a lot more crap, and maybe I need to run NoScript or start running a Pi-hole or something like that. But when you open up a desktop version of some of these web pages, there's too many like videos wanting to play, ads on the corners and stuff like that it wants to load up. So it takes forever to load up some of these general pages, while the mobile version of these pages just kind of load up, instantaneously. I think that has something to do with it too.
Yeah.
You're also not running multiple tabs and multiple browsers on your phone.
That's true, too. I usually only run about, maybe 8 tabs at a time on my mobile. I know I don't get up there into the 30s or 40s.
I do have sometimes, 15 windows or tabs open on the mobile, but it seems to be okay. It's things like that can slow it down. And also, I want to say about the video point. So, people will like different screen sizes on a mobile device, even for video. People will usually want a slightly bigger screen, I would have thought. But even on a small screen, video can come out quite fine, I would say. But then some people will be like, why don't you watch that on a laptop? But I find that video is generally fine on different sizes of screen even, and different mobile operating systems even. But it's also works usually fine on a laptop as well.
Yeah, if I can break in, it's time to, a little past time, to say Happy New Year to the west coast of the United States and the rest of the Pacific time zone.
Yeah, yes.
Happy New Year. 50, how many tabs, what have you maxed out by? How many tabs have you, the most amount of tabs, there we go, that's the right way to put it. What is the most amount of tabs you've had open on the browser before?
On a desktop, I'm embarrassed to say there were times probably maybe, I haven't lately, but maybe 200 or something.
How do you keep track of that? Yeah, it did.
So,
you really don't, you open something and say, I want to look at that and deal with it later, and then rather than bookmarking
So, California and Mexico, I guess, up in here. And yeah, I was thinking with tabs, 200 is, I don't know if I've actually had 200 open, but yeah, you can end up with about 50, 60 open quite easy, actually, depending on what you're doing.
Well, anymore, I'm running a lot of tab managers. There's one tab, which you click on it, and then anything that's not pinned or whatever, it just puts them in a web page. So you can always go back to that web page and find the link and reopen. This is for Firefox. Tab Hunter is one I use because you get so many tabs open and it will search your open tabs by keyword. So those are a couple tab managers I recommend.
I had a question. Does anyone have a browser that will allow you to access mobile versions of web pages?
I think you can set that up.
You can do that on Chrome and Chromium.
I think you can do that on some of the desktop browsers, either with sets it up or use
the search. I believe Vivaldi as well.
Well, Vivaldi is Chrome.
I think Vivaldi actually has like a shortcut on its main, on somewhere on the top or the bottom or the left or the right.
I mean, seriously, who uses Vivaldi? I hear about it at times on like
OMG and stuff. But I could play Netflix and Chrome on Linux. It worked for that on Linux before Chrome did.
Yeah, I think I have tried it before, actually.
What was it called? Do you remember?
Vivaldi?
No, the thing to switch modes in Chrome.
I think you inspect the page, and then under the network tools, you can change what layout you want your page.
There was a name for it. I just can't remember what it was called, where it would basically change the way that you... the way you browsed other pages, like you could browse the page as, I think it was an add-on, I think. That's what I was thinking of. That was like you were saying, that back in the, when we had to do a little configuring to be able to get Netflix to work with Linux.
Oh, you're talking about the header rewriter thing, the plugin?
Yeah, where it would change.
There's Live Headers was like a diagnostic tool, and then there's another one. Yeah, there's another one where it's specifically designed to do that, but that just changes your header. That doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't work the same way as when you inspect the page and you click the little tool that toggles, it says toggle device toolbar, and it changes it to tablet or phone or regular.
I thought there was something where where you can change it, where you can make the web page think you were like Internet Explorer, or make it think it was like Safari or something.
Yeah, that's user ID.
Yeah, that's the user agent string, and there was a user agent string switcher.
That's a user agent switcher. Yeah, user agent switcher.
That's it. Thank you.
Gentlemen, if you really want to go spelunking into the glorious past and versus the what people thought was going to be the glorious future, I have a book to recommend to you, which also seems to be in Google Books. One moment.
Telnet BBS?
No, it's called Exploring the Internet, A Technical Travelogue by Carl Malamud. This is a book written around 1991-93 about a fella who converted some OSI documents to PDF form and had them on his server supplied by Sun, and he explored the internet. At the time, you could actually follow where connections were being made and how the net was growing. He also talked about how there was a tremendous fight to get TCP IP and you know, the internet protocols that we understand into Europe and other countries, because the Organization for International Standards was pushing their own seven-layer magic carpet. They were also making those same standards very expensive for the world to actually access. And when he put them up on a server, shortly after finding out that people were actually accessing the standards on the server, the people at the Organization for International Standards had him take down the server and unpublish the published data, because the paper standards were an expensive slush fund for the OSI people. And they would have tons of them printed up, and a few of them would be sold. But since it was all UN money, nobody really cared. But the kind of politicking and how people had to tunnel stuff through like X25 links and stuff to try to use the TCP IP in a Europe where things were locked down to the OSI seven-layer model, which produced a lot of standards but very few implementations that could actually work with each other.
So did they not allow FidoNet and the like in Europe at that time?
Well, a lot of the times FidoNet and stuff required making a phone call, and in some countries that was a major problem.
Oh, yeah, I wonder how the Europe thing was for phone companies in the 80s. It was bad enough with states here. Must have been even worse country to country.
Well, the whole thing was that everything was designated that the phone companies, which were, of course, government organizations in most of Europe at the time, locked everything down, so anyone trying to do a private network was looked at like they were stealing money from the government. The fact that the government couldn't provide the services that the private companies were capable of doing was overlooked. The details make hilarious reading. Yeah, like OSI only wanted, what, something like 256 networks in the world?
Well, that would just be too many numbers to keep track of.
Well, the only person that's supposed to have a network is the national phone company, so you don't need any more networks than you have national phone companies.
Yeah, I guess that wouldn't work here since we had all private phone companies and ISPs and universities, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, actually, that's what, and besides, TCP/IP came out of DARPA, and that came out of the evil American Defense Industrial Complex, while the OSI paper came out of Geneva, Switzerland, and some very expensive junketing talk fests.
Is OSI like the IEEE?
Actually, IEEE is the, I believe, the American branch of the OSI. Representative agency, whatever you want to call it.
Is IEEE government-owned, or is that a private thing?
I think it's somewhere in the hazy middle. When you're dealing with international standards or national standards that have to mesh with other international standards, things get pretty muddy. We were talking earlier about some European Union stuff and the politics of getting networks across national boundaries, and with the EU management, I should really wash my mouth out, but it was amazing. Also, the IBM network at this time was a purely and simply bootleg construction of IBM system operators and system programmers, and it became a primary part of IBM's own connection with itself. Yeah, if you look on garlic.com, I think it's garlic.com, Ann and Lynn Wheeler's stuff talks about how IBM's VMOS, which IBM repeatedly tried to kill off, was the thing that kept their own worldwide systems going.
You must have a different garlic.com. I'm getting South Valley Internet.
Maybe it's garlic.net. You want to look at Ann and Lynn Wheeler, or maybe it's garlic.org. I don't have the proper extension for it.
No, it's none of those. Those are all ISP things.
50, I would just like to say thank you for putting things into the Etherpad.
Well, I'm not getting everything in. I do it every few minutes. It's like, oh, what we were talking about 5 minutes ago. Never mind.
Still, I appreciate it. I even appreciate the fact that you named yourself in the Etherpad so I can give you the credit.
Well, I think that carries over from the Etherpad for the show, for Linux Slugcast.
Probably. It's the same pad. It's not the same page, but the same pad.
Right.
Good Lord, I think I'm going to hang in for like maybe even another 10 more minutes, and then I'm going to call it a night. We tell my daughter that she's not allowed to actually get up and out of bed until at least like 5 o'clock. And if I go to bed now, that'll give me, what, like an hour and a half actual sleep if she gets up.
It's a little past my bedtime, too. I got to drive a lot tomorrow.
What time are you starting to drive?
Tomorrow. I don't know. Depends on what time we can get the loaded up, so probably 10 or 11.
And how long was it for you?
It's a good 12, 13 hours.
Okay.
And I won't be the only one driving, so...
That's good.
Yeah, I am going to set an alarm so I can jump back in here just before the end and see what's going on. But, I was all headed towards bed myself.
Yeah.
What time's the end?
So we usually, like, what is it? It's about 7 EST, and I don't know what it is, UTC. But about 7 o'clock EST, we usually check to see if there's anybody on and then if there's anybody talking. If there's still people on and talking, and then we just keep it going until we stop hearing people talking, and we'll stop the recording. So basically, officially around 7 a.m. EST. And if people are still talking, then we'll just let it go and then, you know, truncate, then come back to it later and check to see if anybody's on there. If not, then we'll shut it down and then, you know, truncate silence will kill any of the dead air.
Well, I did want to bring up one thing. I just found a guy that's selling a 3D printer for $125, but it's the M3D Micro Plus 3D printer. I'm not
Skip
sure
it.
If I should.
M3D is a little square cube.
Yeah, it's tiny.
It's not heated bed. You have to use their PLA filament with it usually because it's a special temperature, I guess.
A special size spool.
It's kind of slow and it's kind of hard to deal with. We had one of those when we first started a couple years ago and dumped it within 6 months.
Okay, okay. And I will give it a pass.
Basically, you really want a heated bed no matter what you do anymore. It always works better.
I know a couple of my buddies got, what was it, the A8?
A8.
Yeah, that's good if you want to build a kit and learn everything about 3D printing. I would recommend the MK3 Prusa i3 if you have either $500 or $1,000 in your pocket. That's the absolute best.
What's the one that Dor got?
That's the CR10 Creality. Right. They have a new 10S. That's still $400. The one he has is $350 now. The new one of the same thing is $4-something, like $425. You can also get the same brand or manufacturer. It's the Ender 3,
yep,
which a lot of people like. It does the same kind of stuff. It's just a little bit smaller but cheaper. That's a really good one. The thing about those is they're easy to customize and upgrade, and you know, once you get the basics down and know what you're doing, you can add stuff to it and get it working pretty good.
Right. Do you know if the Ender has the heated bed?
That I don't know. I know of a couple of guys that have one, and I can't remember if they said it does or not. But again, that's something you can add later if you really want it, which I recommend.
Yeah, that's something I should look into, is like the Ender. Because the Ender is the same type of style as, I think, the Tronxy, where it's got the arm as opposed to the...
Right.
Yeah, like the arc, is the, like the A-Net 8 has. But I've heard nothing but good things about the Ender. I think... Who was it? I know of two people who got them, actually.
Well, there's a lot of people that have them, which means you can get a lot of help if you ask around.
Right. And the Tronxy's not unlike that. The Tronxy, I don't have a heated bed, but anything that I've gotten to print has been pretty good. But like I said, there's still like a learning curve with it. But there is a... I am not a Facebook promoter at all. Basically, I'm just on Facebook to keep track of my family, because I got ticked off the fact that my wife knew more about what was going on with my family than I did, because she followed up on Facebook. So I joined Facebook, but there was also a Tronxy group on Facebook, and they are super helpful when it comes to anything. I've posted stuff there in the past going, hey, what's going on with this? And they came back with, there was like five or six people that just automatically like came in and responded and was willing to help out. But the Ender looked like it was a pretty good product.
Yeah, the Ender is actually not just the arm. It looks like the CR10. It's just smaller.
Really?
Yeah, it's a full H. But I think it does only have one Z axis. Like the A-Net, I think, has a left and right, up and down, whereas the Ender and the CR10 only have one.
50, have you got yours up and running yet?
It's sitting there. I haven't done anything with it yet.
What, did you get the monochrome or the mono price?
I did.
Monoprice is the same style as the Tronxy X1, but yours is more of, a lot of the stuff is encased and it's ready to print out of the box.
Yeah, there's no assembly or anything on it. It looks exactly like the one Joel has, except it's backwards.
Right. I was going to say, I think Joel got one that was very similar.
All right, guys. Good night. I'll see a bunch of you on Friday.
Yep. Happy New Year, Joel.
Looking forward to it.
Happy New Year.
That's right. That's this Friday, isn't it?
Yep, first Friday, and I don't know. Don't hold me to it, but I thought I would try to spend at least part of the day tomorrow working on some of these real-world projects I always say I'm going to do and never do.
Okay.
I think the way I'm going today, tonight, I'm probably going to spend most of tomorrow in and out of, like, naps. 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, coffee.
Yeah, can't
coffee.
Be easy if kids. Can't be easy if kids in the house.
Right.
Well, I may be holding the fort here for a while, so thank you, gentlemen, for everything.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for hanging out.
Right?
and giving us good history information.
Right?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of the historic reference person for a lot of stuff since my first computing experience was on a Wang using a teletype. The storage medium was the yellow teletype punch paper tape.
History and puns.
All part of the Ashby service.
I always love the racing snail one.
Yes, I just finished dissecting that relatively recently.
So it looks like the Ender 3 does have a maximum bed temperature of 110 C, so it must have a heated bed. So for $187, it's a partially built machine. That's pretty darn good.
Well, it looks like I'm probably going to be saving up for an Ender 3.
Yeah, skip the ANET and go straight to that, because the ANET's, you know, might be 140, but it does not compare.
Yeah, and it seems like the ANET's going to be a lot of work trying to get put together. And, like, the Tronc-C was some work, but the ANET seems like it's a little bit more.
Yeah, and sometimes the ANET doesn't have all the parts, from what I hear. So
Tronc-C's the same way. I've heard a lot of horror stories from people not having enough screws or something like that with the Tronc-C.
Yeah, and when you've not done it before, you don't know what you don't have, and it just really knocks you back a bit.
Yeah, I was trying to explain that to somebody before, that, you know, these things sometimes are more kit than they are actual, just like, you know, a finished product. They give you, like, you're just given a fistful of screws and a fistful of the stuff that you need to basically get the thing running. And most of the time you get the right amount and you have some extra stuff. I mean, I have a bunch of extra screws, but there are other times when people get, like, not enough of some of the things that they need and whatnot.
Yeah, it's the Chinese warehouse experience. You're going to get what they give you.
Exactly. Yeah, 3D printing is such a... The whole fact that this idea moved as quickly as it did, and I know a lot of that has to do with the... Okay, it's too late and I've had a little too much to drink, maybe. But I'm blanking on the guy's name, the company. But since they open source
Prusa Research.
That's it, Prusa. The whole Prusa design and stuff, because the way they open sourced all the stuff, that everything was able to move at the speed that it did. Because I remember there was a time when we were talking about 3D printers, and it was like you had to spend $1,000 to get something that was like, I don't know, like a box that you basically tried to put something together, and no one had anything really out there. And nowadays you can spend $150 and get yourself something that's like pretty much almost out of the box. You could just start printing stuff, and there's enough stuff out there between Thingiverse and whatever else that you can actually print something cool pretty quickly.
Yeah, there's basically three major things that occurred pretty close together. One was super cheap stepper motors, super cheap 8-bit microcontrollers with boards set up to control those motors. And then the hot end materials. When Prusa was putting his stuff together, you had to wrap your own wire to make a tube that would heat up to the right temperature to do the plastic. You know, you were making everything yourself. If you look on the wiki page for, I don't know, it's probably reprap.org, they have a hot end area. And if you look through there, you can see all the, you know, old revisions of things. And it looks like when they're, you know, making, you know, capacitors, inductors in the 1920s. It looks like that kind of stuff.
Wow, I gotta look that stuff up. But nowadays, a lot of these parts are so cheap, like you're saying. I mean, you can buy motors and, you know, all the tubing and everything else. I mean, I went on Amazon and bought replacement parts for like half this printer, and, you know, maybe like $10 a piece for like different things. I bought like a whole friggin' thing of the tubing and, you know, I don't know. The speed at which that this finally got caught up, and nowadays you can do whatever with these things, is just phenomenal.
Yeah, there's plenty of cheap knockoff stuff on eBay and wherever. I think the best source to go is the e3d-online.com. It's a UK company, and they produce like the V6 hot end that you bought. If you bought a knockoff, it was knocked off of their original design. And so they're the precision manufacturers of all that stuff, and they have a lot of really, really good equipment.
I'll have to check that out.
And it's not really that much more expensive. You know, you can pay $30 for the hot end on eBay, but you're going to pay $45 from these guys. You may as well spend the extra $10 to get the perfect one.
Right.
And I was surprised. Living in Hawaii, they don't have shipping like you know, U.S. Post Office, they have like international 2-day for like $12.50. So if you buy things that don't weigh a lot or not bulky, I can get stuff from the UK in 2 days cheaper than I can buy it from Amazon.
Aren't you closer to China too?
Well, kind of in the middle, but you know, I don't think we're a major hub for China.
I never understood people who have like the 3D printer and don't know what to do with it. I've had times when I've just sat there and gone through like Thingiverse going, okay, I want to print that, I want to print that, I want to print that. I mean, even simple little things, like I found a orb that's a storage container that prints in like 3 separate parts, top part, you know, and they kind of all swivel and they're used for like different storage compartments, but then when you fold it all back together, it's an orb. Like, that's cool. I want to do that.
Yeah, part of it too is just, you know, figuring out the puzzle pieces. You can go on Tinkercad and it's super basic, but you can take, you know, blocks and cylinders and planes and, you know, tubes and stuff and make whatever shape you want and print it.
Yeah, once I get everything running up and running again, I want to, number one, print out a bunch of things that I have found, and then number two, just get more into the designing aspect of things.
One of the first things I ever printed that I made myself, I still use today, and that's probably 2 years old. It's just a clip, a plastic clip for that wire stick under the hood of your car that holds up your hood when you have your hood up. The plastic clip broke on my truck, so I looked at the old one and played around with a model enough and printed out a few of them and replaced it, and that piece of plastic is still working today.
I just took it, stick it to the hood of the car.
Stick it to the hood of the car.
Well, stick the plastic clip on. Because you're talking about the clip that the metal piece that goes to the that holds the hood of the car up when it's open, right?
Yeah. So when you put the that metal bar down to close the hood, there's a clip that holds it from vibrating around.
Right.
I replaced that clip.
Right.
And that just clips into a hole in the front there.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that it clipped into a hole. I didn't know if you had to use like some sort of a glue to get the thing on, or.
Oh no, it's a clip-in manufactured thing that there's like a square hole in the metal on top of the radiator, and that clip pops into that little hole, and that clip has, you know, a pinchy thing on the top that holds that bar.
Right. That'd be on the inside of the car, not on the hood. Okay. Yeah, sorry. For some reason, I was thinking that bar was on the hood, but it sticks into the hood. It's been a while since I've opened up the hood of a car.
Can I drop a note for those who may be upgrading laptops?
Of course.
This is not a commercial. They're just a company that I found to be very good.
Is it Pluggables?
No. Pluggables is good if you're doing anything with USB, video, charging, all sorts of stuff. But this is a company called New Mode US. New Mode Electronics is their official name. What I purchased from them was a eSATA P adapter that uses the old eSATA P, which is the powered eSATA connection, and I used it to hook up to a cheap SSD externally on my old laptop. I also got a replacement for the DVD drive that holds an SSD, adapts an SSD to your CD DVD drive inside the laptop.
So that's newmodeus.com is the website.
Yes. Now, I got mine through Amazon, but what I wanted to, with your talk about Chinese warehousing, the cable that I came with has two pieces, one of which would adapt to the DVD drive that I pulled out, and there was a second part that would adapt that connection to a regular laptop hard drive or SSD. It was missing the second part. I contacted Amazon, Amazon contacted NewMode, and they had that part to me in a few days, a very quick correction of their error. I find a company that responds to a bobble quickly more impressive than someone who may do it perfectly. because you know you can trust them to back their stuff.
So you bought it at Amazon, but it was a NewMode US product, and you told Amazon there was a problem, and Amazon told NewMode, and they fixed it.
And they fixed it quickly. They sent me, yep, the part's going to be in the mail. It was delivered. I'm quite impressed.
Yeah, that's another example of getting a good product from Amazon. I bought some, you know, no-name LED headlights through Amazon, and I could have gone to eBay or somewhere else, but I bought it through Amazon, and when they went out, there's zero documentation in the package. You know, it doesn't have very good English, you know, any instructions. It just kind of shows you some pictures of how to set it up and all this stuff. Well, about 6 months later, one of the headlights went out, and all it says in the packaging is says, contact manufacturer for replacement if broken, you know, and a couple of things like that. Well, there's no phone number to the manufacturer. There's no website to the manufacturer. So I get on Amazon, I look at the reviews and, you know, how to contact these people and what their information is. And basically, there was nothing I could do in the listing. But I told Amazon that I needed to get the manufacturer to replace this broken thing. And so Amazon contacted the people that listed that product. And then the people that actually listed the product contacted me through the Amazon communication system, however they do it. And they got me the product. So, yeah, if you're going to buy something weird, I think Amazon is helpful when something bad happens.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, I bought two items. One of them was a different package than I actually ordered, but they cleared it up in days. The replacement part came to me faster than my original order.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty good. According to NewMode US, they're in California. And it's funny because I've done these websites in the past. This is a completely unskinned, basic ZenCart website. They don't even have pretty URLs. All the URLs are, you know, main underscore page equals index, you know, ampersand, cpath, blah, 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 and whatever the ID number is. They didn't even bother to skin anything. They just installed ZenCart, put their stuff in there, and started selling stuff. So it looks like they pay more attention to customer service, at least, than they do the website, which is probably good.
All right, so, Jay Rulo, are they already shooting off fireworks over there?
Oh, yes. They started at 5:30. It's 10:45.
All right, guys, I got to go to bed. Happy New Year. Sorry, Happy New Year, and I'll probably talk to some of you guys in the morning, if anybody's in the morning. But if not, I'll see some of you guys on Friday.
Yeah, Jay Rulo, I'd hang out till it was your New Year's, but I'm just getting too old.
No worries. Have a good night and Happy New Year, everybody.
Well, I'm going back to my days as a midnight to 8 security guard. Staying up from sundown to sunup brings me back to, well, the 90s when I was doing security all night.
All night, netminer.
Take care. Talk to you tomorrow or Friday.
Happy New Year, Mrs. Zook. Do you guys have a New Year's drink or food that you do every year?
Well, I do commercial eggnog. The more alcoholic drinks are medically inadvisable for me.
I finally had more than one eggnog at Christmas with my family. That was nice. I haven't really had eggnog before. Not bad. It was the basic grocery store brand.
I look forward to it, although this year you can only get it by the quart locally.
Yeah, I think it was a quart.
Hi, guys. Mrs. Zook here.
Hey, Mrs. Zook.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I have Mr. Zook here, too.
Happy New Year.
And my friend. And my friend.
Like a Tony Montana little friend?
No, like my best friend from when we were in college. She's still my best friend.
Say hello. Oh, come here from the middle.
Sorry.
that's how this year's going to be, isn't it?
You had one job.
Anyway, imagine I did a really, really good impersonation of that bit, you know.
I had one job. It was to press the space bar.
Alcohol may have been cold.
Well, after the first bottle of champagne, I think we can forgive you.
I don't know. We haven't been here long enough for you to know how bad this could get.
Isn't your, aren't you in Central Time Zone? Your New Year's already happened.
We're in Pacific, and our New Year's just happened here, too. So, yeah, but we're in Pacific.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Arizona for some reason.
Desert, definitely desert. We're in Nevada.
Oh, that's right. So Zappos still over there?
Zappos, the retail chain?
The shoe people that Amazon bought.
I don't know if we have any open still here in this area, but I know that we ship to them all the time with one of the customers that I warehouse for.
I remember reading an article they were big in Vegas, or that was their headquarters for a while.
That might be the case. Vegas is 450 miles from here. So who's been on tonight? Who did we miss?
Well, 5150 just left. Seb Unity from Sweden left a little while ago. I think it was Honky Magoo left. Joe from Tilts and Other Things was here earlier.
So yeah, we missed all the fun people. Apart from you, obviously.
And I think all the Tilts people were supposed to be on earlier in the day, but I just got on a couple hours ago.
Yeah, we had a house full that we just finally sent the old folks home and tucked the small folks into bed, so we finally get to be, you know, middle adults.
So have your fireworks subsided?
Well, they're illegal in this state unless they're at the actual, like, pyrotechnic shows that are put on. So, yeah, they have, but that didn't mean that they didn't happen.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch, and the cops will go and try and figure out who they are.
Yeah, my son's friend lives around the corner, and every year I have to Facebook him and threaten him with police action.
Yeah.
Well, they sell all kinds of stuff at Walmart and Costco over here, so... But they just don't have the roadside sign or the roadside stands like in Texas.
The only place you can get them in Nevada legally is at the Indian Reservation, and then you can't take them off the reservation.
Which, of course, stops people how?
Yeah, it doesn't. We were just discussing that when we start push to talk button. Yeah, it doesn't stop anybody. That's why I always have to threaten the neighbor boy with police action. That's where he's getting them.
Well, I got lucky this year. I just moved into a new house, and it just rained for about 30 minutes. And then, you know, fireworks were going off all the time, but now they're accumulating more and more. I told my family that this year I'll be sitting at home spraying down the house, hoping it doesn't catch on fire.
We probably get like 8 inches of precipitation in the whole year. Luckily, it is typically this time of year that we get it.
So have you guys been doing any Linuxy stuff this year?
We've been talking about going back to doing some podcasting. I know Zoke's done some HPR episodes, but I haven't been able to do anything much with it this year. I've been working a lot of hours. I spend too much time away from home and doing things that aren't my designated hobbies. I think we both miss hanging out with our old crew online, though. We used to have a lot of fun. On, you know, whatever night it was, Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, you guys used to be on the Ogcast shows and different things with Klaatu and those guys, right?
We used to mostly be on Linux Cranks, although sometimes I think we went on something kind of techie once in a while, and a few others probably here or there, hit or miss.
Well, I can extend an invitation to Linux Lugcast as the remaining representative of that group.
Yeah, you're going to have a Friday show, right? What time does that start? On what time zone?
9 o'clock Eastern. The mumble details are on our website. And 9 o'clock is a very nominal time. Sometimes people are there 8:30, and sometimes the start time drags.
Yeah, that would be 6 p.m. our time, which means we'd probably just be getting off work, and that would be not me. I haven't been at work, home from work, before 8 p.m. any night in the last 2 weeks, and I just don't know when that's going to let up. But Zoke might be able to pull it off. It depends on how cooperative the 5-year-old is.
Well, we sometimes run to midnight Eastern.
Well, then I guess that we just have to hop on late, maybe.
Yes, and we are on the first and third Fridays of the month, so you get 2 chances a month to hear our brilliance, or our fertile exposition anyway.
I'll have Zoke put it on the calendar, because I think we should probably try to start getting back out there again. I think that the longer we put it off, the sooner we get ourselves back doing any one thing, the sooner we'll get back into the swing of it.
Well, we're extremely open format, so it's not we're part of the old Dev Random and whatnot crew, Colonel Panic.
Mrs. Zook, do you guys do any kind of particular New Year's food or drink at the New Year?
Drink, anything alcoholic. Food, anything that could be eaten with fingers and dipped. Did you guys just hear what I said, or did I manage to break it?
I heard you.
Okay, good. Perfectly fine. Because I've got this nasty knack of accidentally breaking things. What about you? What's your poison?
Well, definitely champagne at midnight, but I've been having mochi, fried mochi, and some kanako and sugar, which is pretty good. It's like
a
rice cake.
What is that? Oh, rice cake?
It's kind of a hard rice cake, like hockey puck looking thing, but you fry it, and because it's a solid kind of hard rice thing, it kind of melts in the pan, and it becomes really bubbly, and expands a little bit, and then you can you flip it over a couple times in the pan with some oil, and so it's got like a crunchy outside and a chewy center, and this kanako stuff is very finely powdered soybean, and you mix that with half and half sugar, and it's a good little snack.
Sounds interesting.
It's supposed to be like a good luck food. It's a Japanese tradition.
I was going to say, it sounds far more appetizing than my mother's idea of a good luck food, which is always black-eyed peas.
Yeah, you're also supposed to have a tangerine and I think clam soup of some kind, but I don't like clams, so I don't do that.
I only do clams when they're deep-fried and breaded.
A lady after my mother's soul, God rest her.
Well, my dad's Southern, and he always told me that everything tastes better if it's deep fried and smothered in cheese.
I'm trying to think of what in the South is deep fried and smothered in cheese.
Doesn't have to be both, but you can do both.
Oh, I see. Melted cheese on anything, or fried.
Yeah.
I'll definitely agree with the fried. My uncle made us some chicken fried steak with top sirloin over the holiday, which was nice.
I made a beef Wellington. Was that last week?
Yeah. Christmas Day.
Yes, Christmas Day. Sorry, yeah. Wow, I probably should have remembered it was Christmas Day.
How many pounds was that?
Maybe it was the day after Christmas.
It was going to be Christmas Day, but it's the day after because...
See, we have this son who's almost 20, and he likes to cook, but he's got this horrible habit of saying, okay, I want to make this, so here's the shopping list. And then we go spend $300 at the grocery store, and then we get all this stuff home, and then he says, oh, I got to go. And we end up having to cook it ourselves.
But, yeah, so I made beef Wellington, which was a 5-pound beef tenderloin and obviously prosciutto and the ductiles or whatever, the mushrooms, and all that fun stuff mixed. I followed the Gordon Ramsay version, sort of. He had a Christmas version, but I didn't find any roasted chestnuts to put in there, unfortunately.
Yeah, I stumbled upon, must have been a 5 or maybe 10-year-old YouTube video of Gordon Ramsay, because I was watching the America's Test Kitchen or something on YouTube, and the next video was Gordon Ramsay's holiday whatever, and he made like 10 different things, and they all looked awesome. That guy knows how to do stuff.
It's kind of weird because he was a footballer originally, soccer player.
I was going to say he could teach an entire class on the proper use of the F word.
Yeah, well, that's his personality. Yes, I mean, if you see him interacting with kids, there was one episode where it was, I don't know, some kids saying kid master chef class something, and there was a girl, and she was like 12 or something, and she's crying because the souffle didn't rise or something. And he sat down and he said, there's no crying in the kitchen. I've got 2 daughters and you know, whichever one is like your age. And he did this like silly little thing and made her smile and cheered her up. And yeah, I just think it's basically just, it's the whole thing. Like
it's a show.
Simon Cowell,
his persona.
That whole, I'm going to be very rude to people just because it gets people to watch, basically.
That's what we should start calling my son when he's being what he is sometimes.
What, Gordon Ramsay?
When he's being a jerk, we should start calling him Simon.
Is Simon English or Australian?
Australian. English.
He's British. He's definitely British.
Just don't call Gordon Ramsay English.
I used to love his Kitchen Nightmare series.
Yeah, whatever did happen to that
I can't even remember where it was. That one that was horrible, where he basically walked away from it. They ignored everything he said. They didn't cook anything. The stuff they cooked was horrible. The only thing he liked was the thing they didn't cook. And they lied to him, and they were just, it was terrible. It was like the wife wanted to do it, so the rich husband said, "Hey, I'll buy you a restaurant," and she had no idea how to cook.
I do remember one where they went back, and I think it was the one where the arrogant chef guy, you know, is like a 22, 25-year-old guy, parents basically mortgaged their place to get him a restaurant, and he wouldn't taste his cooking, and Gordon Ramsay was just like, "Why in the world would you serve anybody food that you have not tasted?"
Yeah.
And then they went back after, and they found out he went back to his old way of doing things, you know, months later, after going through all this stuff.
The problem is a lot of people seem to do that. A lot of the reality TV shows, A, it's all sort of bigged up for TV a little anyway. But from what I heard is that most of these shows, the people go back to their old ways and basically fail. The Biggest Loser show was it? Well, yeah, the people lose, yeah, 400 pounds or whatever. Look, in a year, not like 2 weeks, but yeah, over the year. And they get surgery to do that and all that stuff. I can't remember the numbers. It's something like of the 15 people that were on the show, 13 of them had put all the weight back on. And 6 of them had gained more weight afterwards. It's a really weird, they'll do it for the TV show, and then people generally go back into their old habits.
So on The Biggest Loser, did they actually, as part of their win package, some kind of surgery, like lap band or something that's like a gastric thing that helps them not eat so much?
That might have been the best way for them to do it, but I think most of them just ended up using the surgery as cosmetic to take off the extra skin. It doesn't go away when you lose fat.
Oh, so they lost weight and they had flab and they got surgery for flab, not eating.
Yeah, my understanding, you see what the TV show wants you to see.
Sure.
And what one of my jobs was actually still IT, but worked at, I'm trying to not give specifics away, but it was not Home Shopping Network, but think Home Shopping Network. That kind of thing. And the studio's teeny. It's just small enough to be, you see basically everything. But you have, there's an area at the back and the hosts walk out from this area in the back. And it's just large enough for the host to hide out of camera shot and then step in and be like, "Hey, welcome." There's nothing back there. There's like wall. There's, warehouse. There was nothing else behind. There was nowhere to go, but you make it look like you can step out and walk out. And it was really weird to see how, you know, they control everything. So you see exactly this. The camera angle is specifically here because if you move it 3 inches to the left, then you've got something you don't want to see. And it was very weird. So I'm sure a lot of these reality TV shows are very strict on sort of what they show you. But supposedly, it's all, yeah, they had, I can't remember the personal trainer guy, but they had him on call to...
Chris something or other.
Yeah, to talk to people and teach them how to eat better and work out.
No, and if they stayed on the program, they could continue with the way they were going. But just like most people, you know, you're doing great. And you're like, "Oh, well, this weekend I can do whatever. I've been doing so good.
Yeah.
I should just reward myself." When you have a food addiction, it's the same as being an alcoholic. You can't get off that wagon at all.
I mean, stupidly simple. You eat less calories than you burn, and then you lose weight. It's one simple formula. That's how it is. Calories in, calories out. Eat less than you burn, and then you lose weight. Eat more, you gain weight.
Listen to us, like we're some kind of health fanatic.
Oh, no, that's real simple. It's just really difficult to do in practice. And as someone who needs to get back on the wagon of eating properly and losing weight again, I'm completely hypocritical here. But
Mr. Beef Wellington over there.
Sorry, what was that?
Mr. Beef Wellington over there.
Yeah, exactly. Beef Wellington was delicious, by the way.
Life's too short. You should enjoy it a little, but
Absolutely.
You can't cross that line between enjoy and abuse, and I think that's where a lot of us end up, because food does become an addiction.
I'm addicted to tacos.
So we have the friend was waiting for me to let go of the button so she could...
She was sitting here hoping we'd stop talking and let go of the button so she could open her beer.
That's podcasting gold. You know, pop the top, pour it in the glass, you can hear the glug, 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 glug.
What glass?
Or no glass, just glug, 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 glug.
We don't waste glasses around here. It came in the appropriate good dispenser.
It's already in the container. What are you putting another one for?
Cheers.
I'm glad it's nice and wet outside. There's all kinds of cool stuff going on.
Wet? What is this water thing you talk about?
It's the stuff that falls from the sky every once in a while.
It's the stuff that fell from the sky every day for me growing up, and that's why I moved to a desert.
Yeah, one extreme to the other.
We get all excited when it rains or snows here because we so rarely see it. We have like 360 days of sun in this state. So we get excited when the rain comes or the snow comes. And every time, I'm all cheering for it and he's over there in the corner pouting.
Well, a bunch of people are like, it rains, do you miss England? And it's like, there's a reason I moved to Odessa. Okay, there's bits of England I totally miss. There's really cool architecture. You know, this building that was 400 years old that was not particularly special because all the other buildings on that road are also 400 years old.
Or older.
My grandmother used to live in a farmhouse that's 400 years old, had a thatched roof. Nothing special about it. Wasn't a listed building because all of them were like that. But the weather is definitely something I do not miss from England.
Well, you can always visit.
Yeah, there is that. Or I could just go to Washington.
Yeah, if I want snow, I drive, maybe 45 minutes to the top of the mountain, and I can enjoy the snow, and then get back in my car and go back to 80 degrees.
That's what's nice about here, where we're at in northern Nevada. If it snows, it doesn't stick around till April. And usually it snows in the mountains, and we just get rain in the valley, and it's really, really pretty, and you have to deal with the stupid drivers. I totally don't mind the snow at all. It's just sharing the road with people who don't know how to cope with it that bothers me. And I really kind of just prefer it when I'm on my couch at home with a book in front of the fireplace.
I gotta make you another drink, and then no one's talking. What did you say?
Talking about the weather. I guess we scared everybody off.
Well, I guess the real show is going to start in about 40 minutes. There's quite a few big bangs going off already.
Okay. What's happening in 40 minutes? Because Alaska was 20 minutes ago, and I'm losing track of which islands are next then. Hawaii? Again.
Yeah, the big island.
Is that 40 minutes for the big island?
Yep.
You're at? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I'm in Kona.
I hate you.
You would hate the humidity.
No, Hawaii is fine. You just stay in the water all the time.
It's a little humid today, but it's been cool.
What do you define as a little humid?
What's your definition of cool?
Well, it's probably like 75 now.
It is 23 degrees on my front porch.
Well, nice. I'm back. I just had to take advantage of a moment's break to grab some lunch and some stuff from the local convenience store across the street.
Welcome back.
I'm being haunted by my housemate, a tuxedo cat, who wants her share of lunch.
Our cat constantly thinks she's starving. It'd be funny if it wasn't so aggravating.
Well, I must admit that I've encouraged her. We usually split the sandwich a little bit. I pull off a chunk of the ham, so she's now got entitlement issues.
If we're still talking about cats, they all have entitlement issues.
That's because they remember the Egyptians worshipped them as gods.
Yes, and the guy who wrote The Cat Came Back was a pessimist.
Doesn't meow mean cat in Egyptian?
And this is a tuxedo cat, female, and the guy who drew Sylvester knew what he was talking about.
We've got an orange tabby who is asleep, not too far from us at the moment.
She's always asleep.
Well, she's a cat. By definition, you know.
She just looks like she's asleep.
Now, this cat keeps me under proper feline supervision.
Have you seen the subreddit, Cats Are Liquid? Because you know they just lie in really weird ways, and it just pieces them like lying.
Like they have no bones.
Yeah, basically. I spilled something on the floor. Their cat's laid out.
Well, this one, is. Well, I'm a restless sleeper, but when I'm awake, the cat believes my highest calling is to pat her. Yes, that was good. The rest of it's mine. We also have a French door, which this cat learned very early to open by herself.
Wait, the French door?
Yeah, it probably has those lever handles instead of the turning knobs.
Oh, right, okay.
We had a cat that could have done that if we didn't have the turning knobs.
That makes sense now. I was confused.
We had a cat that used... We had a cat that used to turn lights on in the hallway because she wanted us to open the bedroom door and let her in at night. So she used to sit out there all night and meow for 5 minutes, and then she'd jump up and turn the light on, jump up and turn the light off, and she'd do that for 2 or 3 minutes, and then she'd go back to meowing. It was the constant chorus all night long.
Well, this cat has learned how to either push the door open or hook its claws into the edge of the door and pull it open. The door, the entire edge of the door has a whole series of little pinpricks.
So there's a story behind this cat we have. We didn't really want a cat. We have a 5-year-old. She just turned 5. And she's a bit of a brute still. And we just weren't ready for a cat. But our son, who just tonight, today, turned 20, he brought this cat home and decided we were having a cat, okay? Now, I was pretty upset at first, but the cat's really cute. She's really, really cute. But then we found out that this cat is going to spend her entire life trying to eat anything and everything that anybody leaves out.
Chocolate.
She figured out how to open the bread box so she could eat the bread.
She chewed through tin foil to get to a cake.
She had to fall to get to a cake. And then she proceeds to get sick on the carpet. It's been a battle. Our bread now lives in the microwave, and everything else lives in the fridge or the freezer. Sometimes we can find a place to put something in the pantry, but we have to put anything and everything that she could possibly chew through into a place that she can't chew through, because if we don't, she will eat it.
Well, a friend of mine had a cat that they originally gave canned food to and then some dry kibble to tide her over. Then the vet said, oh, no, don't give the dry food. Well, the cat got up on the kitchen counter and looked in the cabinets and tore into anything that looked like a cat food bag, beans, what have you. Now, she spilled them on the counter, but the cat had been taught that it wasn't supposed to eat anything on the counter. So it would knock the stuff onto the floor where it could eat it. This cat also learned that at a certain turning, one way was to the vet in bad times, and one way was to Petco in fun. So it reacted accordingly.
So did they start driving around the corner past Petco?
Well, it was a fork in the road, and there were two different directions, but the Petco, when the cat went to Petco, it had fun. And it was very happy. When it was headed toward the vet, and it knew that it was headed toward the vet, it was kind of upset, you know. Also, it was a feral kitten, so they said, well, you know, it could be standoffish or whatnot. From my friend, she reported that it was the most snuggle puss that you could find.
You guys have those plastic bags that you get at the grocery store? Not the paper bag, but like the crunchy plastic bag?
Yeah, we have different varieties of those, yes.
We had this cat that would look at you from around the corner of the kitchen cabinet, and if there was a bag on the floor, he would step on the bag and make noise with the bag and looking at you to try to get you to go into the kitchen to give her some food, or him some food. It was the funniest thing. If there was a bag somewhere and the cat wanted your attention, he'd go stand by the bag and just look at you and step on this bag and make the crunchy bag noise until he looked at it and did something.
I discovered the most brilliant thing in the entire world last night, or the night before. My 5-year-old, with a long string with a deflated balloon tied to the end, her and the cat ran around the house for an hour and a half with this dumb balloon. And they were both so tired when they were done, they left me alone.
Well, one of my cats got mugged by a catnip mouse.
Can you repeat that? Did I hear you right?
Well, the catnip mouse was on an elastic string, as they tended to be. And the cat was chasing it, and the string got wrapped around a hind leg. So the cat was convinced that it was being attacked by a catnip mouse.
That is so funny.
Also, that was one of our last outdoor cats. At the end of my driveway, we lived near a stream, a Canada goose landed. This little gray cat looked at the goose and started doing its best Mutual of Omaha, I'm a Lioness imitation. The good news is that in a true F-Troop moment, neither the cat nor the goose got into trouble with the other.
Do you know what's really sad about that story is I'm old enough that I can hear theme music to Mutual of Omaha in my head right now.
I can see Marlon Perkins in a pond or a lake or something.
Yes, well, yes, but this gray cat once crawled under a blanket on my mother's bed and decided to wash up, including lifting one hind leg up in the air, which of course lifted the blanket up, but the cat didn't care. It was going to wash up regardless of whether it was under a blanket or not. We also had a 50-pound West Highland Terrier Spitz Cross. It was a large family-sized Westie. And when the cat wanted to sleep in the dog's bed, the dog moved. When the cat wanted to sleep under my mother's bed, if the dog was there, it moved. The cat bossed around the dog that weighed, you know, five times what it did. My cat just opened that French door into our hallway because it wants to go upstairs and look around or whatever, since it's not going to get any more ham tonight.
She's done. It's time to patrol.
Well, for some reason, we just disconnected on this, and we're finally back. I don't know what caused that. It was really weird.
Well, this cat is not spoiled. In our front window, I've put a drop leaf on the windowsill to widen the sill, and in the summertime, that sometimes has a fan on it. In our dining room, there's a large, low radiator which the cat will sleep on. That's also another window. We don't have air conditioning in the house, so I put fans in that window, so the cat has that sometimes. And yes, it will sleep on a hot water radiator. We have a gas stove which had the pilot light in the middle under a griddle, and the cat would stretch out on that and sleep.
What's the normal temperature of a cat? Aren't they a little hotter?
Yeah, 104 degrees body temperature. Now she's looking through the French door saying, won't you open this thing?
I've never let any of my cats be outdoor cats. I'm always, like, petrified they're going to get hit by a car.
Well, around here, the chief hazard is the coyotes.
Yeah, I was going to say, we get enough of those out where we live, too. I wouldn't want them to get eaten by those either. But typically, if you bring your pets in at night, that's not a problem.
This is our first truly house cat because a friend of mine, well, a neighbor on the other side of the block, reported that it had a orange tiger, and they'd found that had been eaten or half-eaten by a coyote.
I can't remember when it starts, but my son's going to go on a coyote hunt here, and I think it's a few weeks, but I'm not positive. I can't remember exact dates, but he's going to go on a coyote hunt this year. They have, like, a free coyote hunting day in this area once a year. I don't know how long it lasts, a couple days, but I don't know how I feel about it, but at the same time,
Well, I remember that there's a certain little patch of woods where the bus turns around. There's a sort of a loop around this little patch of woods with a dentist's office on it. And in the parking area, I saw two or three coyotes, 9 o'clock one Monday morning.
Yeah, they're pretty common here, too. Much in the city, but out in the outskirts where we live, you see them, you hear them more than you see them, but you know, if you're eating lunch in your car at work, they might come up, and I don't know. I've had one do that once, which was one time too many, to be honest.
Well, we're sort of out in the suburbs. There's patches of woods and stuff around here. There isn't enough to keep a reasonable small game population. And then, of course, there's the terriers and cats, which coyotes are not picky eaters.
That's the truth.
And building density is high enough around here that hunting is not an option.
Yeah, in Nevada, if you go 5 miles outside of any city limits, you're probably going to be in pretty much the middle of nowhere, so no one cares.
Yeah, my brother's a long-haul trucker, and he tells me about going out west and saying, "What's out there?" He said, "Nothing in large quantity."
That's kinder than what most of us say. We always say things like, "Go that way a little bit, and there's a whole lot of nothing."
Well, I'm calling him on his cell phone, and Verizon used to have a commercial where they had a guy who was saying, "Can you hear me now?" I was telling my brother that he should sign up with AT&T because he can tell them all the places they don't have coverage.
Well, out here, the only two carriers that are even worth having at all, really, are... I mean, I'm talking about the whole West Coast. I'm just talking about my section of Nevada. Are really AT&T and Verizon. I think Verizon still beats AT&T most of the time. We do have several other carriers you can get, but you have a lot more no signal zones with those.
Yeah, well, my brother also uses the internet over his cell phone, so, you know, that's his lifeline. And he bounces from Washington to California, and he can be up to Chicago and down to Atlanta.
It's a life I'm not sure I could live, that's for sure. I have a hard enough time when I have to work long hours, not being able to come home when I want to come home. But, you know, I know lots of people who work long haul, and you either love it or you hate it, I guess.
Well, he's been married several times.
Then he probably loves it, right?
Well, he's making do. He's looking forward to retiring to the Philippines.
They have lots of snakes there. I'm not so sure that would appeal to me.
As I understand it, they also have special taxes for non-resident aliens, or for resident aliens. But he believes it's going to be a tropical paradise, and since he's going to be on Manila, the island which where the city of Manila is, he doesn't believe that he's going to run into any problems with the Muslim extremists. Pointing out that the reason the army went to the 45 was because of Philippine Muslim extremists didn't seem to make an impression. Also, he found moving to a country where the returning native workers have to shrink wrap their baggage so that customs people do not salt it with ammunition and then charge them for importing ammunition to be a perfectly reasonable and civilized area.
That's interesting. I work in the freight industry, and there's tons of LTL carriers that could teach those custom agents how to rewrap that baggage without a problem.
Well, I find it to be an if you have to defend yourself against your own customs people, I don't find that to be a positive outcome.
I completely agree with you. That is a total reason to promptly move, right?
Well, also the fact that, as far as he believes that his pension or what have you will go far over there, but he doesn't realize that there's no Medicare and there's no all the medication is cash and all the hospitals are cash and carry, basically. And as a resident alien, I have heard that he won't be able to work or anything because they don't want to take jobs away from the natives, you know, the usual protectionist stuff, but they're perfectly willing to tax him,
Oh, of course they are. I mean, that's just how governments work. I mean, that's kind of, I don't know, it's probably not right. It's not fair, but it is. And you're not going to find any place that's any different. I'm sure the U.S. has similar or even worse rules in some respects. But what I'd be concerned about is even if you have to deal with healthcare in a foreign nation, I don't have the faith I would need to attend a doctor in another nation. I'm just, I don't know. I mean, maybe if I was like in England or something, and that might be different because I know people who have used that system. But I am just, I don't like doctors to begin with. And I would be absolutely petrified to have to go to one in a nation that didn't even speak English, because how could you even advocate for yourself if you don't know the language?
Well, also, he says, well, if he brings a certain amount of money, they don't tax him. But if you ever have to tap that bankroll for anything like medical care, then they turn on the taxes again.
And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense either, does it? I mean, the more money you have, the more people want to tax you usually, correct? Why would they suddenly decide not to tax you when you had a certain amount of money? I don't know. I don't understand.
Because it gets people over there, they put it in the bank, and then something causes them to go under the magic number, and then they're taxable. It's like some of these assisted living arrangements that they have in the U.S. here, where you can move in if you have a certain amount of assets, and then they keep the meter running until your assets are drained sufficiently, and then you're out on whatever nursing home you can afford on the public dole.
Yeah, I think every country has strange stuff like that in their systems. I don't think anyone in particular has a monopoly on any of it. I think you just got to be selective and decide which ones you can live with and which ones you can't.
Well, I can't really point out these too much because it just doesn't get through.
Well, when people make up their mind, they make up their mind. And you usually can't change it. I mean, especially when they're grown adults. And you notice that kids are a lot more open to logical reasoning than most adults you know are?
Well, I'm calling from the Boston area. Logical reasoning seems to be an option around here, not a standard feature.
Yeah, I think that seems to be at least a concept that 50% of this country doesn't grasp, right?
Well, that's one reason why we have the current president, and the Democrats really missed the boat on that one. You know, they've been pushing class warfare and whatnot.
They're all about identity politics, and identity politics only works if you don't know what your identity is. Sadly, most of us know exactly who we are.
Well, the problem you had is that you had the class people who knew what was good for us. Then you had the rest of us with no class who decided to say, to heck with you.
I completely agree. We were tired of the status quo. It wasn't getting us where we needed to be. I am not a supporter of our current president in the classic sense of the word. But I don't think that we had any good options during the last election. So, you know, you pick the lesser of the two evils, right? That's all we've ever done for decades and whatever. Politics is what it is, and I don't think there was
I used to be a Republican, but the second President Bush and our current incumbent made me an independent.
So interestingly enough, I'm an American citizen now. Obviously wasn't originally. The last presidential election was the first one I got to vote in. And oh boy, what a wonderful choice that was. And I mean that in the most sarcastic way
possible. Shit pile or bigger shit pile?
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, I can recommend to you a book called The Last Centurion. I believe John Ringo was the author. And it posits what a Clinton administration would have been like. Bit of a dystopia. They talk about also global warming turning into global cooling and some other issues, like the porousness of our borders when it comes to containerized freight. So it's quite possible for someone with a epidemic illness to be shipped from China to the U.S. and our customs is just not built to handle that. It's built to find drugs, but not people.
Well, it's hard to fight a war if you aren't allowed to fight. And that applies to so many things in life. But if you take away all of the tools to win, you only set them up for failure, right?
Which describes the Vietnam experience fairly succinctly.
It describes every war we've been involved in since World War II. It describes everything we've tried to do on the border. It describes the war on drugs. I mean, it describes just about everything. It's because, well, in part, this is going to sound so 1945 of me in essence, but it's the pussification of America. Everybody is afraid to hurt somebody's feelings.
Well, do you remember when the U.S. used to back the right to privacy?
I remember when the U.S. believed there was a right to privacy. Now everybody in this country is like, don't expect it. It's not there.
Well, do you realize the Patriot Act made basically the Bill of Rights purely optional?
They haven't made that purely optional yet, although I have seen those who would like to see it become purely optional or only apply to the parts of speech and life that they want it to. But
Well, when you remember that somebody shut down a secure email system because the government wanted keys to the system, and this guy, I forget his name, but he wasn't allowed to tell his lawyer what he was charged with because it was a national security issue.
Yeah, they have those those super secret court things that they can't, you're not allowed to tell anyone about, which is just
BS.
Horrible. Yeah, I mean, that's why some companies have warrant canaries, because they can slap you with a warrant that says you're not allowed to tell. But they'll go to Google and say, we want information about Netminer, and you cannot tell him, you cannot tell anyone, you're not allowed to discuss it, or we will slap you with a felony and arrest you and your family and, you know, shoot your kids. And okay, not quite, but it's they have this whole thing about you cannot tell anyone about it. So some companies have warrant canaries with a page that says we have not received any warrants requesting information of our people.
I just get frustrated with the whole us versus them crap. Aren't we all on the same goddamn team?
Yeah.
Well, yes, but you see, to protect you, you see, you can have a lock on your front door, but in order to protect you, you have to give the government a key to your back door. Reminds me of the Soviet apartment blocks that had special elevators for the KGB.
Yeah, and I know the UK wants
cheers, to... Cheers, Happy New Year to me.
Oh, Happy New Year. Yes, Happy New Year, Hawaii.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Yeah, I barely speak English. depending on how many beers I've had.
I've seen Lilo and Stitch. Does that count?
I flew past Hawaii once.
I've been to Hawaii.
I've not. I've been past it. That's the closest I've been.
I was not old enough to appreciate it, and a luau scared me because the pig still had its head attached.
The pigs had what?
The head was still attached to the pig when they buried it in the ground. I had nightmares for a month about this flaming pig that was chasing me. I was eight.
This is the psychiatrist, Alice.
Yeah, usually they pull it out and they put it on a big rack, and they're trying to get on the rack. Sometimes it comes apart, and you get, you know, legs this way and that way.
All I saw was the pig in the ground, on the leaves and the coals, fully intact, and I never wanted to see any more about it. And so I completely and totally avoided any visual of that area of the luau.
Was he
but
smiling?
I still had nightmares for a month.
Was he smiling as he chased you?
I don't know. I couldn't see past the flames. I was eight, and I was severely sunburned. So I don't know if it was truly
the
pig or delirium.
That just nightmare, doesn't it?
It was bad.
What I found impressive about the Hawaiians was that they were, and still are, those that practice this, what the Canadians would call First Nations people. According to something that I saw on YouTube, they had this sort of greeting ceremony where the warriors would greet people, and there would be sort of a force, you know, they would be in your face, but they would move forward, and according to one of the guys, a military guy who went through the process, or who was greeted this way, when they came up, you could feel sort of a chai energy radiating from these people. So they basically said, you know, if you're nice people, we'll be nice to you. And if you're not nice people, well, were perfectly willing to get busy. Quite impressive.
Yeah, I think the Maori people in New Zealand are like that. There's still quite a bit of attitude among the younger people.
Well, this is a refreshingly honest way of greeting foreigners. I mean, they're not hostile from the start, they're just prepared.
Yeah, it's probably good to show that you're not passive from the beginning.
Well, also, I saw they have a habit of sort of sledding down some of those steep slopes that I found quite impressive, since it was sort of like tobogganing without snow.
That I haven't seen. There's not any soft lava over here.
Well, I guess it was on a different island, but yeah, I mean, these are, you know.
They have waterways they call flumes that go from the top of the mountain, and they kind of meander through the hills down to the lower areas, and that's how they do irrigation in the mountain areas. And they run these flumes, and they're just basically not like a kayak, but like that log ride at Six Flags, you know, you ride in the log down the water chute, kind of like that, but through these ditches. And that can be fast at sometimes, different points in the thing. It's like a closed circuit whitewater rafting.
I'm familiar with some of the similar, well, they were usually wooden, but there were similar flumes that were used for transporting logs in the Northwest. And I can imagine riding them would be rather exciting. Also, some of these Polynesians would give the average football player pause.
Yeah, there's definitely some tough guys out there.
Well, I'm just saying, pygmies, they aren't, you know, very strong, very well-built.
So there's, like, all these people in this room, and we're the only three talking?
I think they're not really there. Some of them are recording.
It's just like when you go into the Oddcast Planet channel, you know, there's, like, everybody and God is in there, but no one is saying anything.
Yeah, except they're not lurking. Their user is just recording it so that they can always have a backup.
Recording nothing, because nothing is being said.
No, what's being said by us is being recorded by everyone with a red dot. Although I did mention earlier that it reminded me of my youth, the days of the silent majority.
What do you mean nothing? The internet loves cats.
Meow.
My cat has not yet learned how to use the keyboard or mouse.
You know, I'd be more interested in training mine how to use the toilet first. When I get to stop scooping a kitty litter pan, I will have it made.
Yes, well, my housemaid is sitting at my feet looking at me with great sad eyes as I'm nibbling on my ham sandwich. By the way, just for your information, my brother found a site called Chewy.com, which has a good price and good shipping on cat kibble. Something like $12 or $13 for 16 pounds of Frisky's seafood sensations.
That's an appropriately named website.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.